And it is 7 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 10 a.m. in the East Coast, and it's 5 p.m. in Jerusalem, Israel. Today, July 26, 2015, and this is Orly Benny Davis, and this is The Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio Studio One, we are going to commemorate the 9 of Av in the Jewish calendar, the day that of fasting in the Jewish faith that we all praying for the rebuilding of the Holy Temple. Now, we are going to have some music on our Sunday show that is Israeli music, but together with Jewish prayers. Maybe it will let you understand and reflect the Jewish spirit as we have it. You know, it's been such an incredible day. I know it's 5 p.m. in Israel, so we already had the fasting day, and events on Temple Mount are evolving. Nothing much, not too bad as if one will think, but stuff that shouldn't happen. And if we really want to rub ourselves, you know, side by side, shoulder to shoulder, humanity in the making, we really need to give each other the space and the time to, you know, to mourn or to celebrate, whatever it is, but just there is space for everybody. And, you know, NASA is looking for other planet to cohabitate, I guess. So maybe if anybody feels too tight, maybe you should join that venture. But as long as we are on planet Earth, it's ours. And we have to keep it, we have to safeguard it, and we have to make sure we are, you know, we are good neighbors. And so far, it's wasn't a fun thing for the neighborhood in Jerusalem today. We had a few episodes. First of all, the Jewish faith, you know, talking about the destruction of the temple as two temples to remember and their destruction. We had a king. We had a kingdom in Israel, and it was King Saul, King David, and King Solomon that united the people. After that, we had kings that divided them. But those three kings represent, you know, Israel at its best. And we don't know why God chose Israel to be what we are and who we are, but we never question God, and we never should question anybody's faith, God, because it's not our place and it's not our position in history or in humanity to do so. And we know that for a fact that everybody deserves a space, and you have, you know, your Sunday to celebrate, the Sunday to reflect upon God. And the Jewish people here in Israel had to fight to even visit the holy places, because for some reason, the United Nations, the one that has the articles of, you know, on human rights, et cetera, and all those things that she has, she's been talking about so much, she never connects to the meaning of human rights when it's arriving to the Jewish people. I have some segments of music, of course, and I got a segment of Rabbi Jonathan Sacks about human rights, if we can connect and find it. Then we have other issues that we want to talk about it. But let's keep on going with some Jewish Israeli music to get the spirit of this incredible day and what it represents to the Jewish people.
Thank you.
and God of grace and mercy, it is. This is Sunday, and we are on BBS Radio. We are commemorating 9/11, and we're talking about the Universal Declaration of Human Rights of United Nations, and something that Rabbi Sacks, Lord Rabbi Sacks from England, had to say about that.
My lords, I too thank the noble Lord, Lord Alton, for enabling us again to address this vital issue of religious freedom. And indeed, salute Baroness Berridge for chairing the APPG on international religious freedom. And salute the courage of both of them in confronting perhaps the single greatest humanitarian issue of our time. I want to add my thanks to the Right Reverend Prelate, the Bishop of Leicester, for his warm, wise, and inspiring contributions to public life, and wish him blessings in the years ahead. My lords, three things have happened to change the religious landscape of the world. First, the secular nationalist regimes that appeared in many parts of the world in the 20th century have given rise to powerful religious counter-revolutions. Secondly, these counter-revolutions are led by religion in its most extreme adversarial and anti-Western form. And third, the revolution in information technology has allowed these groups to form, organize, and communicate to actual and potential followers throughout the world with astonishing speed. The internet is, for radical political religion, what printing was for Martin Luther. It allows them to circumvent and outflank all existing structures of power. The result has been the politicization of religion and the religionizing of politics. And throughout history, this has been a deadly combination. In the long run, it will threaten us all, because in a global age, no country or culture is an island. We must do minimally three things. First, given that religious freedom is enshrined as Article 18 in the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights, there should be, under the auspices of the United Nations, a global gathering of religious leaders and thinkers to formulate an agreed set of principles that are sustainable theologically within their respective faiths and to which member nations can be called to account. Otherwise, Article 18 will continue to be a utopian ideal. Secondly, we must do the theological work. That is fundamental. What happened in Europe after the wars of religion in the 16th and 17th centuries is that a group of thinkers, among them John Milton, Thomas Hobbes, John Locke, and Benedict Spinoza, sat down, reread the Bible, and formulated some of the most important ideas ever formulated about state and society: the social contract, the moral limits of power, the liberty of conscience, the doctrine of toleration, and the very concept of human rights. These were religious ideals based on the Bible, which is what John F. Kennedy meant when he said in his inaugural address, "The same revolutionary beliefs for which our forebears fought are still at issue around the globe, the belief that the rights of man come not from the generosity of the state, but from the hand of God." We have not yet done the theological work for a global society in the information age. And not all religions of the world are yet fully part of that conversation. But if we neglect the theology, all else will fail. Third, we must stand together, the people of all faiths and of none, because we are all at risk. Christians are being persecuted throughout the Middle East and elsewhere. Jews are facing a new and resurgent anti-Semitism. Muslims who stand on the wrong side of the Sunni-Shia divide are being killed in great numbers. Hindus, Sikhs, Buddhists, Baha'i, and others face persecution in some parts of the world. There must be some set of principles that we can appeal to and be held accountable to if our common humanity is to survive our religious differences. Religious freedom is about our common humanity, and we must fight for it if we are not to lose it. This, I believe, is the issue of our time.
My Lord.
Shilamah alot, esayna.
עושה שמיים וארץ, אל ייתן למות רגליך.
Right, that was a part of the plans of King David. It's the Shir Lamalot, it's the ascending to the glory of God, and reminding us all that, you know, working in this world needs to have some powerful God beside, you know, watching over you, and the God of the universe is watching this universe, even though that many people think that he's going, you know, in different directions than ours. But I know some good believers know that we are on the right track, even that it looks like we are all over the place. One of the true believers that I respect and is a Christian, but is wonderful. He's been trying to explain to everybody what the Jewish faith is standing for and what the Judeo-Christian faith is. And it is Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck made a really incredible universal calling for to come to stand with Jerusalem when he thought that, and he felt like everybody's coming against it. And I was lucky enough to get a pass to that event. It wasn't a journalistic pass. It was a friend's pass. And I went there and I realized that everybody is are not really sure. They were a little shaken. They had the guts to go, and they arrived and everything, but the moment truth, they knew it was an awesome moment in history. So I did not forget, and I did not forget some people from other faith that stuck a flag in my friends and I, and they said, oh, take a picture of this. And on that, and you know, we as a cordial Israeli, he actually from South Africa, we were, you know, cordial to them in Jerusalem. We hold the flag and we didn't read into it. And they took the picture. And in that picture, they were saying that, for the God of their gods. And it was distorting the truth of the image, because they were trying to represent people who were holding the flag as something that we're not. And it wasn't right. It's not right to hand somebody else flag on Temple Mount, telling them to hold it for a nice picture, a friendly picture, smiling, and then cheating them before the holy place of all. That's not right. It's not right to take children in the Second World War and host them in church and changing the religion. It's not right. It's not right taking and forcing the Christian women to change their religion to Muslim, because if not, they kill them. It's not right. I love freedom of religion, but about freedom, the very essence of it is the fact that you are free to choose whoever you believe in. And God is yours, and God is in your heart, and you do it in the way you want to do it. And it's your freedom. So that's about what's wonderful about God. He gives you the choice. Let's listen to Glenn Beck.
Opposed ignorance is dangerous. It is dangerous to the Jews. It is dangerous to Israel. It is dangerous to the world. It is dangerous to the United States. It is dangerous to you and your soul, quite frankly. I've told you, as Israel goes, so goes the Western world. They are the keystone to freedom in the Middle East. If they fall, we all fall. Tonight, I'm going to show you history. I've got less than an hour now, so we're going to have to race through this program, but you need to have some perspective on where this hatred has come from. please pardon the sloppiness, because we're going to cover 2,000 years quickly. But I urge you to do your own homework and look these things up for yourself. People tend to forget that our society is based on the history of the Jews. When you go to the Supreme Court building, try looking up. You'll see this over the door. You will see a row of the world's lawgivers. Right in the middle is Moses, and he is holding the Ten Commandments. Moses is also featured in the House chamber, where the president gives his State of the Union address. The Statue of Liberty, most people think she's wearing a crown, but she's not wearing a crown. If you've ever been over to, or you've seen Michelangelo's Moses, he's carved him with horns. That's because of a mistranslation of the scriptures. It's not horns, it's rays of light. This isn't a crown, this is the rays of the sun or the rays of light coming from behind her. The tablets in her arms represent the moment Moses descends Mount Sinai with the Ten Commandments. It's the law and the ray of light from God on her head. There's a quote from Moses on the Liberty Bell. The Pennsylvania Assembly chose, "Proclaim liberty throughout the land to all the inhabitants thereof." That's from Leviticus. It's on the Liberty Bell. Jefferson, Franklin, John Adams led a committee designed to come up with the seal of the United States. You've seen the seal of the United States a million times, but this isn't what they originally designed. The original design was this. It was Moses leading the Israelites across the Red Sea with a pillar of fire keeping the Pharaoh at bay. Around the seal, it doesn't say e pluribus unum. It says rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God. That's our original seal. And they all center around Exodus and Moses. These are just a few examples of the influence that Moses has had on us. There are many, many more. It is impossible to argue that we are indeed a Judeo-Christian country, given the spectacular results of basing a country on those principles and values. Most people are cool with that. Most people now are growing apathetic, however, and they're like, whatever. Because we're too far removed from the types of religious oppression of the founders' era. And we are too far removed from the religious oppression that is happening currently in the Middle East. As we sleep, those vocal few who don't like freedom of religion have made progress. And they have worked feverishly to fundamentally transform America. But they haven't. If you change, if you fundamentally transform America, the greatest country ever created in the history of the planet, you should clearly explain to people what you plan to change to. What are you going to change into? But nobody has done that. It's just change. And that's what's happening in the Middle East. Well, what does that change mean? No one is willing to lay that out for you. No one's willing to lay that out for the American people, not even the president. I will. I have. And I will continue tonight. The science is settled. We are a Judeo-Christian society. The argument is whether we will remain a Judeo-Christian society that not only tolerates, but embraces and protects all other points of view, so long as you are not trying to blow things or people up. That is what is at question. Will we remain that country? Tonight, the history of the hatred in the Middle East. And I want you to know that there is hatred from all religions, all sides. Everybody has a little bit of blood on their hands here. We are talking about 5,000 years of history. There are no sacred cows, but there also are no accusations historically tonight. Only what is happening on the ground today. And again, the question is not who has blood on their hands in the past. The question is, will we put fresh blood on our hands today? It all starts in Syria. 175 to 163 BC. It was the king of Syria. He was the first to try and outlaw Judaism. He was angry. He thought people, Jews, were the reason his people were opposing his policy. So he started making all kinds of laws, such as outlawing the Sabbath and circumcision, which was interesting when I was reading this last night, because what a coincidence. In San Francisco, this November, they're actually voting on banning circumcision. Huh. We'll get back to that later. We have the Crusades that were killing the Christians and the Jews and the Muslims. We have that. It was an awful, bloody time. In 1215, Pope Innocent III decreed that Jews should wear a solid yellow circle sewn into an upper garment. He said, Jews are doomed to wander about the earth as fugitives and vagabonds, and their faces must be covered with shame. Remember the yellow circle. In 1240, King Louis IX ordered the Talmud be put on trial in Paris and ended up burning thousands of copies of it. He ordered the expulsion of many Jews and confiscated their lands for his use. In 1290, King Edward expelled the Jews from England. 1306, 1394, Jews were kicked out of France. 1394, Jews expelled from Hungary. 1421, they're kicked out of Austria. You seeing a pattern? 1492, 200,000 Jews were expelled from Spain when Columbus were sailing the ocean blue. The reason? They were afraid Jews would taint newly converted Christians. 1445 to 1495, same thing was happening in Lithuania. Pattern. You got it? 1497, the Jews are expelled from Portugal. This time is also the time that marked the start of Jews not being permitted at all in Russia for 200 years. 1543, Martin Luther. This is the guy who fundamentally changed Christianity, but he's also the guy that penned The Jews and Their Lies. His recommendation was for violence, burning synagogues, destroying their homes, confiscating Jewish holy books, confiscating property, forcing physical labor, and expelling the Jews. Many argue that Hitler, who did call Luther a great reformer, was inspired by Luther. If a prominent religious leader such as Luther made it acceptable to hate Jews, imagine how widespread this was. Ask yourself this question. If you didn't know this part of history, why didn't you know this part of history? By the way, footnote, later the Lutheran Church renounced those views, but many argue that Hitler used them to legitimize his own ideas, but Hitler was crazy. 1555, Jews in Italy, forced into ghettos. Remember the yellow circle? This time they're made to wear yellow hats outside of the ghetto. In 1648, 100,000 Jews are killed in the Ukraine. Up until 1772, Jews weren't permitted in Russia, and then we get to 1925, Mein Kampf, Hitler. But it wasn't just in Germany. This disease, again, we all have blood on our hands, spreads to the United States. In 1939, the St. Louis shows up. This is a German ship carrying Jewish refugees. It was denied entry into the U.S. We wouldn't take them. We turned the ship around, knowing that they were headed towards their death. By 1945, somebody had effectively tried to exterminate the Jews. Oh, Hitler was very effective. 67% of all European Jews were murdered. Nearly 6 million out of 8.8 million. Think of this, America, because that was done without any real technology. Imagine an uprising now. Imagine these kinds of ideas with full GPS and other state-of-the-art technologies. How would anyone escape that? Or even better, if you're all gathered in one place, like Israel, and somebody wants to vaporize you because Allah says it's your job to vaporize, imagine what could be done. Crazy? Watch this.
عدد محدود من السنين سيدرك الجميع من الصهاينة والمستوطنين أن مجيئهم إلى فلسطين كان للمذبحة الكبرى التي يريد الله بها أن يريح البشرية من شره.
Okay. We all know what Hitler did, even though people like Ahmadinejad deny what Hitler did. But I want to show you what else was happening around the same time, mainly in the Middle East. It's gone under the radar for some unknown reason, and it explains almost everything you see in the Middle East. It explains why they want to drive the Jews into the sea. It explains why they say the Holocaust never happened. By the end of this program, my hope is the only thing that will remain unexplained in your mind is why the world, who promised never ever again, doesn't see the old hatreds brewing once again. Or if they do see, I mean, I don't know how you can miss the protest and the chance of Jew. If they do see, why don't they care?
All right. All right, we're back, and that was Glenn Beck, and he was talking about the history of the Jewish faith, and the bottom line is the destruction of the temple that we commemorate today is the representation of all those years over the centuries that they tried to diminish the Jewish faith. And diminishing the Jewish faith is a start to disengage the Christian from the base, and then to make them as a different one. Please don't think that it's only the Jews. It's after the Christian too, because people who don't believe that you exist or your faith you exist don't respect you. So I'm not sure how to call it. But the phrase that you heard on Glenn Beck program, and I really recommend you go and scroll by YouTube to check Glenn Beck definition of as the world as he sees that. He was mentioning the Palestinian, and that's what I was telling myself long time ago, that the Palestinian issue is not an excuse to be to other people, because there was never a Palestinian state, and anybody in a history book, with a history book, can look up and see where is Palestinian state. There was never. So let's go and get the rhetoric in order. Okay, we are not saying that those people do not exist now as they call them. That's their name. You can call oneself as you wish, but the state was never existing. So if you think about what's the idea behind of having a Palestinian, is the one to slaughter the Jews, to get them out of the land. And the way to do it is by taking out the heart of the nation, which is Jerusalem, and Temple Mount is the base. When I start moving on the temple issue, and actually searching myself in the late of the 1990s, I was listening to many, many ideas, but something popped in my mind. It's like, why we don't have a temple, and creating one small temple in Hilton and Island made me understand how important it is to have a temple. Now, when I had to shut it down without, not on my behalf, for somebody who did not respect the environment that is a temple, the broken heart that I had could never be assembled to any love or anything that I had in my life. I was shattered completely, because I wanted, my only shrine to exist. Now, I just can think about my feeling and the feeling of a nation that been thought out of, pushed out of their land, destroyed the temple, destroying the city, and destroyed everything that they have just because they're the children of God. And, if there is something that is getting very boring, is the repetition that you have and you hear about. It's like they come after the Jews again and again. You guys are so bored. Whoever don't understand, can get the life. And I'm talking about the enemy, as I'm not, I had the pleasure, the honor, and respect to live in America, so I know how they respect other people. And they, trust me, you can't even compare it to Europe. Europeans are different. When I was in Europe, I came in dark time. By the time I left, it was enlightened. I don't know if it's my influence. Of course it was. But Let's say it. I don't know why they're after us. It's like the girls, they cannot get, so they start punching her. What's the deal? What's the deal with it? You know, the world needs to settle with that thought. Why the God of Israel is something that people want to banish? And he is the true God of the Bible. And, you know, every Christian, the Judeo-Christian, understand that. So I don't understand. We have, you know, many people that follow the Bible. Many people understand the rules. And it's still after the faith. So I want to say something. If the record doesn't show that we deserve to have a break, and Jonathan Sachs said in one of his article on some of his comments, he says, you know, we are such a great nation of 5,000 years, but there is a few years only of peace. Of course, we are a nonsense to each other. That's something that we have to agree on. But for some reason, you guys don't understand that the Israeli are the free-born Jewish people, and they're different. They're different not because I'm excusing you Jewish, but they're different in spirit. They're not going to let you take over. It's not going to happen. You know, if the Jews get to be pushed around and they settle, maybe in the diaspora, now they have Israelis, so they're empowered. And now Israeli, born with the freedom of American way, they cannot even tolerate all this. And I am, for example, one. I've been raised up in a place where freedom is essential as a woman, as an individual, as a state, as a nation. So I am like my other brothers and sisters. They're the same. Don't tell us what to do. And, you know, work hard to get successful. Stop whining that the Jews take you, you know, anywhere. We work hard. We don't use our free time to do else. We don't settle, you know, just to do. And, of course, we don't occupy ourselves in sports. You guys all know that because we're really bad at that. And so we don't have much pleasure. We have, of course, Sabbath, so we might like food. We have a very good cuisine. But else, we study, we philosophize and analyze the study of the Torah, the biblical scripture and the Bible. We study what the people, the philosophers said. We had so many scientists and Nobel Prize winners who can teach us again and again what we're doing wrong, and they never miss the opportunity to tell us. So we are occupied by thinking a lot. And other people like to indulge in other things. So we occupied ourselves in trade, and we are doing well as usual, and we'll do well again and again, because that's what we do. And the world, you know, just get a grip of yourself, get over yourself, you know, if you can. If you can't be deaf, just join us. So for everybody in the rest of the world, it's time to turn the page on that part of history too, because it's boring. The Palestinian people, you hush up a little, okay? And you tell us to accept the Jewish state first. You don't accept the Jewish state. Don't tell us, talk about liberty. You have no right to ask for liberty when you don't give other people already in the making, only already working forever, 5,000 years on the same land, to tell us that we are not here. And you can shout, God is great, in Arab language, on Temple Mount, but he definitely has a plan. And the plan is to include us and to be all together. And we're supposed to shine. We are the big brother, as the Christian and the Pope used to say, big brother, that we're supposed to take care and enlighten the world. So give us a break. You know, give us a minute of peace, okay? Try, you know, we can pick up the fight after, but we need 500 years of peace, okay? And then we'll talk again. Let's get some more prayer music, and we'll be back after that. Anna Bekoach, that, please, God, give us the strength to overcome all the challenges of the world. Please, God, give us the power to be one for you. And, you know, be graceful with us. We are really, we're asking for your forgiveness. That's the word of this incredible song. It's a prayer. And they say that it's mystical because when you ask for God for so much, you know, grace, he will grant you that. When you're praying for God to help you, he always comes through. And, you know, maybe not in the way we think he should, and maybe not in the moment we think he should be, obey, you know, become out to your help. But he'll give you the signals. And it's not the signal that we expect sometimes, but those are the ones that give us, it will be a phone call, it will be a note, it will be a book, it will be animals sometimes, it will be the radio, it will be something that will bring you to your conscience and to tell you that there is a faith, there is a hope, and there is something, because as long as you're alive, you have the chance to repent, to come back and ask for mercy. And, you know, on this incredible day, we commemorate not just the destruction of the temple and the city of Jerusalem when it got destructed. We still have to rebuild it again after all these years again. But there are so many destructions that happen in those times. You know, the Holocaust started around that time, they say. Not that I remember when it stopped being anti-Jewish in Europe. They're always a continuation. It's undercover. Now it's more global. Then it's the Palestinians. Something has to come to in order to push the Jews, right? But now you have Israel. And when Israel is in the map, it's different. Now, there was something that happened 10 years ago, and it was the evacuation of Gush Katif. It's the people that went and settled in Gaza. And everybody said, push them away. They are knowing those Palestinians. Sure enough, they got Hamas, they got ISIS, and they got all the goodies to come and slaughter them and to do everything to bomb the heck out of their lifestyle. So if 10 years ago they said the settlers are the obvious obstacle to peace, let me call upon all of you. 10 years ago, and you got Daesh all over, ISIS all over the Middle East. Now think again, you're trying to go after Judea and Samaria. Judea, by definition, is Judah. It means Jewish, right? It's Israeli. It's no man territory is the definition of the universe, global law. But it is under the radar of Israel. They are settlers, and there are hundreds of thousands of settlers are not going to be removed, and they are not going anywhere. And by all meaning, you guys push back all those goons again. Don't even think, because 10 years ago we made a mistake to listen to some odd voice, and somebody was in charge then that is not among the living, but cannot repent. But let's tell you, the cries of those tears of those girls still are alive and vivid, and those families are still tarnished. So let's listen to that minute of news that I still have for those from the settlers that got evacuated. Right, we ran out of time, so I want to salute all of you. Hoping that you have a blessed Sunday. Love you all. Be with you tomorrow at my regular time at 8 p.m. Jerusalem time. So talk to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.